food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Adisk, in his interview with James Corbett of the Corbett Report, will air during the second and third segment of the program today. And today I will be joined with David Krieger from Hobson NBT. And David is one of my major gold suppliers. So we're going to talk about gold, and we're going to talk about what we can expect for 2015. And for today, it is December 18th, 2015. Once again, welcome to the program. Let's go ahead and get right to the market report before I say hello to David. Today, gold was up $9.40 today at $11.99. We have silver up 18 at $16.03, along with platinum up 10 at $12.04. Palladium up 16, a little over 2%, at $797. The USDX today is up 0.15 at 89.22. Crude oil down 1.84 at 54.63. And Santa Claus has arrived in the paper markets today. You had the Dow jumping 420 points, and that's the biggest point gain since 2011. The S&P has had the best day of the year, up 2.5%, with the Dow 420 to the upside, 17,776. You have the NASDAQ, 4,748, up 104, up almost, well, they're up all over 2%. The NASDAQ is 2.25%. The S&P up 48 at 2,061. Up 2.40%. The 10-year yield, 220, 2.20%, up 0.06. So, you know, a mighty strange day in the markets. And again, if you look to the fundamentals, I mean, what were the fundamentals that really pushed the market up 420 points today? I can't name one, except the Federal Reserve. And I don't know when Janet Yellen became such a strong speaker, but all she had to do was change the language to and use the one little word, patient. That's what's pushing the market up, what, 600 points in 2 days. Patience. And I'm not sure what message she was trying to come across with that one word, but I guess if you're patient, the Federal Reserve will be there for all the paper markets. So an interesting day in the markets. Good afternoon, David Krieger.
Melody, how are you? It's great to be with you again. Merry Christmas to you.
Well, Merry Christmas to you also. And that's just next week, next Thursday.
It is.
Yes.
We're all excited out here. Our younger son who lives in Houston is coming over, and so we'll have a Krieger family reunion, and we're really looking forward to it. So he'll be here Sunday night, and we're decorating the house and getting all set, and it's going to be a great time. We haven't seen him in about a year.
Well, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah. You said he's coming in from Texas?
He is. He lives in Houston. He designs valves for oil wells. And he's a 28-year-old guy who was a lieutenant on a fast-attack submarine and operated a nuclear power plant for about 5 years. And he's doing really well. And as soon as his time in the Navy was up, he was immediately hired by a frontline valve company. And so he's built valve trains for oil wells in the Sea of Okhotsk off of Russia. In a desert in the Middle East in Saudi Arabia, and one in South America. So he's doing well.
Well, you might ask him. I saw headlines today where Texas is in danger of a recession due to the since the shale boom there has been a blessing, but the tumbling oil prices, you know, are beginning to put a little bit of weight on the state. And so, you know, these are, you know, everyone talks about the declining oil prices and the impact that it has on Russia and Venezuela and Iran and so forth. But certainly it is also having an impact here.
Well, it is. But, you know, that almost is a segue into talking about whether we think this is short term thinking or long term thinking. Oil is going to be used for a long time. As long as we are dependent on overseas sources to the degree we are, and the world is, we're missing out. We really need to pursue that. And I think you have to have a long-term view of it. Same way you have to have a long-term view of our economy here. You know, today 400 points, great news. I guess, you know, your 401k today is going to be good. But you have to ask yourself, what's the long-term view of this? Those fundamentals haven't changed. And they give a lot of people a chill when you stop and think of $18 trillion in debt, economic instability, rumors of nuclear weapons and you know, these things that go on in Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iraq. And I mean, this is a dangerous time. I think we all need to have a longer view.
Well, I think 2015, we're going to see a lot of volatility. Mm. And I think fundamentals, when people are looking for investments and they need to look to the fundamentals and to really see, and you have to hold on to those fundamentals, because if you have true fundamentals, you're going to see markets should fluctuate. They should go up, they should go down, they should go sideways. And certainly we don't even see that with the paper markets because we know that, you know, it's being driven by the Federal Reserve. So fundamentals are going to be very important, I think. And I believe the fundamentals for gold are strong, are very strong. And they haven't waived. They haven't they only become stronger with the problems that you just mentioned.
Well, I think you're right. I'm you know, kind of as an anecdotal note here. I walk around and my friends now are exhibiting a tremendous amount of interest in gold, and I think, you know, I don't do business with my friends. I refer them, or I do something else. I just don't want to get involved with that kind of thing. But they are asking, they are pumping, and I think some of these people are owners of major companies, and they're nervous about the long term. And if you do keep those fundamentals in mind, it's just like being a long-term investor. You have to overlook the short-term rises and falls, and you have to stick with what your going-in position is in the long term. So I agree with you. I think as long as this market is as it is, I think that's a great time to buy gold and silver.
We're going to be talking about, we're going to be running a little special on, we don't talk much on foreign gold, about foreign gold. I sell a lot of foreign gold, Swiss francs, British sovereigns, there's other ones that I like. We're going to talk about the Angel today. But there was one more thing I wanted to note in the news today. I saw that GM is halting their deliveries to Russia. because of the drop of the ruble. Now, we all know that I'm sure there's not a huge demand in Russia for, you know, GM vehicles. I'm sure they don't sell a whole lot. But I think it's a sign as if one company, now you don't know if GM is doing it with a pushing of from the government, you know, maybe, you know, behind doors, making them, you know, close down, saying, hey, we bailed you out, so, you know, put a little more heat on Russia. Or is this a sign of other companies that will stop their deliveries to Russia because of the currency conversions? So I think this is the first big one that I saw that is doing something because of the currency problem in Russia.
Well, I'm not familiar with you know, the market in Russia either, but you know, GM is trying to be competitive around the world, and when you have a borderline recession or depression going on in Russia, I don't blame them for being very conservative of what's going on there.
And there was another. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I was trying to look up here to see what the volume was last year, and I'm not that fast. I can't pull it out. But
for the volume of vehicles.
Yeah. Well, it says overall, GM has sold 170,000 cars under the Chevrolet, Opel, and Cadillac brands in Russia in the first 11 months of this year. So 170,000 units is not very much. I mean, it may sound like a lot, but in comparison to millions that they're going to sell this year, that it's really kind of a drop in the bucket, but significant, I guess.
Well, I think it's more significant that it's the company itself and that they put the halt to deliveries. And will we see other companies follow suit? That's,
well,
you know.
Well, Land Rover and Jaguar have also stopped deliveries. They're suspended sales, I guess, is what they're talking about. And that's coming from the Indian automaker, what's called Tata. And I think that's interesting, too. So you're right, Melody. They're, you know, it's spreading a little bit.
You know, something else that...
Think of it this way, though. That's cars. Think of all the other things that people must be getting nervous about shipping to Russia right now.
And you have a time where the people over there are scurrying to buy things because they want to convert their rubles into something else. And they know inflation is coming. And so now they're looking to spend their rubles. And here you have companies eliminating items. So,
well, is that a lesson for us? I mean, really, when you stop and think about it, isn't that one
Absolutely.
Of the concerns that people here have? They're living it out. We are still looking at it, and we all recognize that the possibility of that is coming, and so it makes a lot of sense when you go out and you try to serve your customers and tell them to, you know, have some precious metals in their holdings. That makes an awful lot of sense to me.
And there's just one more thing I wanted to touch on before we start talking about gold, because that's what we were supposed to do, is, and Al and I will probably talk a little bit more about it tomorrow, is the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. They said a little over almost a week ago that they're ready to discuss ways to move forward without the United States on reforms that would give emerging markets greater IMF voting power. The IMF member nations agreed on a so-called quota reforms in 2010. They did have a strong backing from the Obama administration, but Congress has so far failed to give the changes a needed stamp of approval. Now, it doesn't say what those changes are that affect the emerging markets, but Congress hasn't given the approval, and now the IMF says, hey, you know, we're ready to move away from you, and we're the major funder. and, you know, our voting power of the IMF. So it seems that it shows another side of weakness for the United States. You know, it shows.
Yeah, I'm sorry to laugh, but I mean, how many more, you know, indications of weakness do we need?
I know, exactly.
It's a daily occurrence, I think.
It's a daily occurrence, yeah. And it's not sure how they'll proceed without the U.S. because we're the controlling shareholder of the fund. But there's a lot of things that they could do to achieve what they need. And, of course, our vote, though, you know, becomes weakened. And it's another sign of, you know, our weakened country, government. So I thought that was interesting.
I agree with you. That's it.
So it's another sign there. So what do you want to talk about gold today? What are your forecasts for 2015?
Well, I got to be really honest with you, Melody, and I say this all the time. I am not an investment guy, and I'm not a financial advisor. And when people ask me, you know, what's gold going to do next month, I cannot tell you. And I absolutely have no more insight than anybody else that watches these markets carefully and has lived through Jimmy Carter's years and a few other pieces of experience.
Well, at least I have a crystal ball. I mean, I polish mine every now and then.
Yeah, no, I'm very uncomfortable because I can give you an opinion, and my opinion is that right now there is all this joy on Wall Street, but we've seen how shaky that joy can be, and I think that. These discussions about the stock market being in great growth and then on very short notice correcting significantly is still a problem. I think with $18 trillion in debt, with the uncertainty of Congress acting, with the instability of the world. I think that gold is long-term outlook for gold is very good, and as I said earlier, I think it's a good time to buy it. Now that's coming from a guy who sells it for a living, but I wouldn't be selling it for a living if I didn't really believe in it either. So, what I would encourage your listeners to do is what I know they do already, is to think through and think of the long term and to prepare themselves for what could be a really kind of an ugly future here for over the next 2 years. I think we're going to see this kind of false market correct, and I think that it's a good time to be out there putting a modest amount of money into precious metals and getting it out of the paper of Wall Street.
Well, I think you offered me some BU Angels, and I'm going to run a special for them today. $264, that includes your shipping costs. You can buy one or 100 at this price. And I'll let you talk to the listeners and describe the Angels.
Well, the Angels are the same size physically as a Swiss franc. They're brilliant, uncirculated quality coins. And every one of them is more than 100 years old. The Angels are French. They weigh the same as a Swiss 20 franc or a Swiss or a French rooster. But the design is really kind of neat. And a lot of people like them because standing on the obverse is a guardian angel who is standing at a stand-up desk, essentially, writing the French Constitution. So you have this beautiful set of wings on the angel forming the majority of the obverse design. In the bottom right hand corner you have the French unofficial national symbol, the rooster, and on the reverse you have the symbol motto of I couldn't pull out the word motto there, the motto of France, which is liberty, equality, and fraternity. And these are really exciting coins. People, particularly around Christmas, like to give them, but I think they're great throughout the year. These are brilliant uncirculated, and they have the same gold weight as a Swiss franc. As I say, it's 0.1867. And what's neat about these coins is they're about the same diameter as a United States nickel. A nickel is 21.2 millimeters. The Angels are 21 millimeters and a little thinner. A great way to track their value is all you do is you take the spot price of gold, multiply it times 0.1867, and that's their melt value. You're selling them for a modest amount over that melt value, including shipping, I think is a good deal. And the reason we're offering them up is, one, we made a really nice purchase of them. And since they're considerably fewer in number than either roosters or Swiss, I thought you'd like them. I thought your listeners would like an opportunity to have some.
Yeah, I think they're great. They're very recognizable, very acceptable. And these are one of the few coins that in the foreign gold that I truly like. And so it's a great thing to add to your collection. So you must give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. $264 for the BU Brilliant Uncirculated Angel. David, we're out of time. We're heading into break. Thank you for joining me today.
And, all the best, Melody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll be heading to break with Al and James Corbett joining you thereafter.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand. Have a plan. Have peace and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97%. Of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. At 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, CORBETTREPORT.com, CorbettReport.com with two T's. James has been living and working in Japan since 2004. started the Corbett Report as an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. Editorial writer for the International Forecaster. And he was recently invited to speak in Japan. Netherlands. He traveled from Japan to the Netherlands to make a public presentation on the political and economic situation in Central Eurasia and what we might be able to see in the future. Hello, James. How are you doing?
Well, I am doing very well today. Thank you, as always, for having me on. And before we start, at the risk of boring some of the listeners, I just want to extend my congratulations to you on the program that you do here, because I know you often start by saying very laudatory and nice things about me, but I'd like to extend that to you. If the listeners, either at my website that listen to this broadcast on a weekly basis, or, of course, your listeners, do appreciate these conversations, I would like them to reflect on the fact that that is a good reflection on the interview. Were, because it is generally interesting questions that provoke interesting answers. So I want to just say thank you so much for having me on. You always ask such interesting questions, and I genuinely look forward to our conversations.
Well, I do too, and I certainly appreciate your appreciation. So now we've got kind of a mutual appreciation society going here. let's do a few questions. Here's something that's a subjective observation with me. I do radio programs on a daily basis with Melody, and I have to find a number of articles every day that we can possibly talk about during the course of the program and prepare a kind of script where we put something together and say, well, we'll talk about this and this and this and this. And last July, for example, I might have to review 10 articles to find one that I was willing to talk about on the program. Today, if I look at 10 articles, I've got 10 that I want to talk about on the program. Mm. It seems that the quality, the magnitude, and the rate of news is accelerating and growing more intense, and it's something that I can see subjectively. Do you see the same thing, or am I just getting a little too old to pay close attention to what's happening?
No, I very much hear you. I understand what you're saying. To some extent, that might be, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of different factors that go into that, and it may be the fact that I'm able to appreciate the importance of a lot more different pieces of information just the longer that I've been looking at it. So there may be some of that in there. But I think objectively, there are a lot of things happening in the world that are of greater import today than there was even a decade ago. And this is a phenomenon that's been noted. I want to say it was Lenin, Vladimir Lenin, that originally said that there are times in history where more happens in a month than happens in the previous decade or something along those lines. I may be butchering that quote and I may be misattributing it, but someone said that, and I think this is one of those times where we just have so much going on in the world that is of such great import that I hear you. I think it's a real phenomenon that's happening now that we have too much to keep our eyes on, almost, and I think that's due to a number of different factors, but I think we are going through a significant transition point in world history that is related to the decline of Pax Americana and the sort of American-led unipolar world, and at times like that, there's just going to be a lot of things to keep our eye on, so no shortage of things to talk about.
What about people in positions of power? Yeah, they have as much or more. You know, I'm sitting here trying. I think I'm doing something special if I can juggle four balls instead of three. They have to juggle 20 or 30. Can they keep up?
That's a very good question, and I'm not sure, I'm sure they would like to think so, and they would like us to believe that that is the case. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's too much for any one person to organize, but we have to keep in mind that, of course, it isn't just individuals that are looking over this. There are, of course, entire institutions that have been created to deal with this, and that have become these generational institutions that have now been in charge of U.S. foreign policy and foreign policy of other countries for decades and generations at this point. If you look at the Council on Foreign Relations or its counterparts in various countries around the world, these types of organizations that have some of the brightest people in the world working for them. I mean, I think it would be a very much a disservice and against our own interests to underestimate the brain power of some of these peoples in these organizations that are very much in positions of power, the true positions of power, I would say, the sort of power behind the throne rather than the political positions of power, where we often make remarks about the stupidity of politicians and how they just don't understand what's happening. And that may or may not be true, but I think the real political power is in these international institutions and in these quasi-governmental institutions that are wielding power behind the thrones. And they really do have some very bright people working for them. So I think we shouldn't underestimate the brain power that goes into keeping track of these various balls in the air, I guess.
You know, the problem with brain power, though, it's an admirable capacity, but it's usually associated, big brain is often associated with a big ego. And when you get, even if you have some magnificently intelligent people in positions of power, when things become unstable, there has to be some serious disagreements. And the solution that one genius might advocate is going to be completely different from the solution that another genius may advocate, and they may not be able to agree on who's right. And to what extent do you suppose ego plays a role in destabilizing, or at least complicating, our international relations, the economy, the politics right now?
I think that plays a much larger role than we would want. At any rate, I mean, supposedly, if we do go along with the narrative that these people are looking after our interests, then we should be aware that that things like just ego and things like that very much do get in the way. And it is interesting to look at the hubris, I think, of a lot of people who get into these positions of political power and sort of flex their muscles. This sort of intellectual technocratic class that likes to that aims to become people of influence and angles their way into positions of power, because there is, I think, a type of hubris associated with that practice. And perhaps no better example of that has been provided to us in recent times than the remarks of Jonathan Gruber, the Obamacare architect, who has been caught on tape multiple times basically denigrating the intelligence of Americans. Oh, they're all stupid, and that's how we managed to pass this Obamacare. I mean, just unbelievable that someone would actually say that out in the open in public forums and not expect to be called out on it. But that is the type of hubris of the intellectual class. And I saw a recent video that I'll point your listeners to. It's called Obamacare Architect Jonathan Gruber versus Eric Hoffer, and it's up on YouTube, so people can look at that. And basically, it's Gruber's remarks basically saying how stupid the American people are, contrasted with Eric Hoffer, who is an American philosopher who actually worked as a longshoreman through his life up until his retirement, but he penned these remarkable books on philosophy on the side. And he talked about the hubris of intellectuals and how a rule by intellectuals is the worst kind of rule that we can institute, because basically the intellectuals are stupid in a way. I mean, they may be very smart when it comes to certain tasks and certain ideas, but they are extremely hubris filled and unable to see the sort of reality of the average person. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So even if these people are the best and the brightest in some sense, I think they may be emotionally stupid. They may be socially stupid. They may be stupid in a lot of other ways that may ultimately be their downfall. And in some ways, since I am very much opposed to this type of oligarchical, intellectual, technocratic power, I certainly hope it will be their downfall. But I guess time will tell on that point.
We can talk about people who are intellectual rising to positions of power, and they become perhaps arrogant. And you were quoting from someone who said that rule by the intellectuals, the arrogant intellectuals, that's not the exact quote, but intellectuals. He described it, if I understood you correctly, as perhaps the worst kind of rule you can have. But is it really worse than rule by rich people? the oligarchy, who's based on the based on money. I mean, if you want to see some arrogant people who really don't have much empathy for others, I'm going to guess you could find a lot of them.
Yes.
At some of the finest country clubs in the world, and at the, you know, hanging around the Federal Reserve might not work there, but they may be familiar with its operation.
Yeah.
What's worse, intellectual money?
Well, I think you're right to point out that that split, because I think that that is a more fleshed out view of the way the system really runs. I think that what we have is, of course, the first level of political reality, which is kind of the cartoon level that's presented as the lowest common denominator on the nightly news, that, you know, the president makes all the decisions and the government is just the Congress and all of this. And I think behind that, of course, we have the power behind the throne of the intellectual technocrats and the whatever, Brzezinski's, Kissinger's, whoever that you might place into that class. But I think behind that, of course, there are the sort of family line, old world, moneyed elite that sponsor and literally buy and pay and control, I think, the technocrats, who are really more like gophers for these people. And I think once you get into that realm, yes, I mean, ultimately, I mean, these people are not just hubristic. They genuinely believe they have a genetic, scientific right to rule over the masses that's been granted to them by this eugenics ideology that was dreamt up in the last century, and that I think is really a religion to these people, as perhaps best reflected by the fact that the Rockefeller-funded Riverside Church in New York City has the bust of Darwin and others, because this really is this type of eugenics-driven elite that I think is behind the technocratic class. So I think that's the real vision of this society. At the very top of the pyramid, it's not the technocrats. It's the moneyed family bloodlines that I think have been in some positions of power for centuries. But so I think the real contrast would be that sort of financial backing to the technocratic power versus a vision of society where the masses are left more or less alone to organize in ways that are responsive to their needs. And that is ultimately what Eric Hoffer is talking about in that clip that I just talked about, where he said, you know, the intellectuals believe that they can create this sort of system that will encapsulate everything and that they can control everything. But really, the best way to harness the true power of humanity, the true potential of the human species, is to leave people alone to organize in ways that respond to their own needs. And I am very much in accord with that idea. I think the answer to this is not going to be found in constructing a better system or a different system. It's the idea that we can escape this idea that everything has to be encapsulated in a system. And that's very difficult for the intellectuals to leave alone, because of course they do want to try to systematize everything and make everything fit into their all of these square pegs fit into their round holes.
Part of the reason they do that, my dad had a little business. He and his partner started something in a garage back in the 1950s, probably. They wound up having a little electroplating business, and they did well. They worked hard, and they did well. But I can remember my dad telling me, and he was working a job to support the business. His partner was running the business in the garage, and my dad was working he had another job he was working at and contributing money to support their partnership and their business. And they struggled, and one thing, they went through, and they became reasonably successful, not spectacularly, but reasonably successful. But I remember him telling me how much their income increased when they began to hire employees. And they understood, they learned the lesson that I might be able to earn $100,000 on my own, working by myself. But if I can get myself an employee, by the time I'm done, I can make enough money off that guy where my personal profit's probably going to go to $120,000. Just by having one employee, I can increase my income by 20%. Now, I'm using that as an example. That's not what my father said. But I can remember him telling me this, and this would go back 1950s, and it was the lesson he'd learned. So where I'm going with this is that employees can make you rich. Insofar as you function as a lone wolf, it's very difficult to make a spectacular or even substantial income. But when you start employing people, you can. And therefore, as soon as you learn that, you have an incentive to get these people, put those square pegs in the round holes, because you can make money off those employees, and that's one of the big incentives. We're not going to let people just run on their own. Come over here. Here, I'm going to give you a job. Work for me. You know? And we take advantage of people that way. And it becomes an impediment to your idea that just leave people alone. Well, we'd be glad to leave them alone unless we can make some money off of them. If we can do that, then we're inclined. Wait, let's organize these people. You see what I'm saying?
I really do, and that's an interesting way of contextualizing that, because I of course, experienced some of that myself. Here I am, this lone wolf who for the last 3 years has been able to make this website my full-time employment, but of course it's just me. I mean, I do everything. I edit and post and research and do everything with regards to this material. But I'm at a point where I now see I could do so much more if I could just hire an employee to help me out, but oh, I don't have the finances to do that. But it's also the question of the more people that you start adding to that, the more you sort of lose the ultimate control of that, the more you lose the vision. To a certain extent, you have to entrust it out to others, which dilutes the message potentially. So it is interesting. I'm facing some of that in my own work now, and thinking about at some point, you know, will that start to happen to me, and will I have to start coordinating people rather than coordinating ideas? So it's all very interesting. But of course, when you extend that out to the societal level, of course there is that profit incentive, and you can look at something like Obamacare. One of the main incentives for that is, of course, the insurance companies who helped to write the legislation get to profit from it immensely by forcing people to buy their insurance. I mean, that's a wonderful gig if you can get it. But I think beyond that, I mean, there are other motives that come in when you're starting to deal at the societal level like that.
Let's talk about these other motives when we return. We'll take a break for some commercial announcements, and James Corbett and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask. My guest is James Corbett. We are Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. We're talking about human motives and how they apply and may push us into systems where we seek to control each other. And perhaps because we think I can profit, if I can control someone else, I can make a profit off this. There's money to be made in control. There's power. We're inclined to do it. I think is this an attribute of just the nature of our culture right now? The nature of, 21st century life, you got to control somebody to make a profit? Or is it part of human nature?
Well, unfortunately, I would say it is deeper than that. I would say it is part of human nature. But as I was saying before the break, I think that the money, the profit incentive is only one part of this, or only one layer of it. And it certainly does exist, absolutely. And as I was saying, for example, in the Obamacare situation, obviously the health insurance companies that helped to write that legislation directly profit from it. So that's an obvious motive. But expand that discussion outwards a little bit and take a look at someone like, for example, Bill Gates. Obviously, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, handling billions upon billions of dollars in grants and trying to direct resources to various problems so that they can help solve these problems. And obviously, I'm a bit skeptical and cynical about that. But take a look, for example, at the way that Bill Gates talks about the healthcare situation in the United States. And a couple of years ago, he was on camera at a technology conference, but he was being asked about these types of issues. And he was talking about, we don't have enough money to fund the education system, so where are we going to find this money? And you look at something like the healthcare system, where millions of dollars are spent on providing palliative care in the last few years of life of a patient who's in their 70s or 80s and can't really be expected to enjoy that care. Why don't we divert some of that money from the end-of-life care for these people and put it in and decide to hire a dozen teachers with that money? And then he makes a very interesting statement. He says, oh, but that would be the death panels, and we're not supposed to talk about that, which is an interesting admission coming from Bill Gates, isn't it? But that, I think, speaks to a different and maybe even deeper and underlying motivation. Obviously, Bill Gates, the multi-billionaire, is not motivated by the idea that he's going to make some money from this scheme or more money. At this point, I mean, money for someone like that is just pieces of paper. What motivates him is, the underlying idea of being that sort of God and playing God and deciding this person lives, this person dies, I'll divert this money over here, I'll construct the perfect society, obviously playing on that ego. And of course, we shouldn't dismiss the fact that his father was actively involved in Planned Parenthood, and the Gateses have a professed fondness for the sorts of eugenics ideals that we were talking about earlier. And then when you really start to expand that out and look at what's possible when people start thinking and start having the resources to direct societies in that way, it becomes actually quite, I think, rather scary in a way when you start to think about what's possible. And look at someone like Bertrand Russell, who back in 1953 was writing about the type of scientific society that's coming into view, where he wrote, diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable, and any serious criticism of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible, which of course was something that was being at least contemplated as much as 60-70 years ago now. And think about how much further along the actual implementation of those types of technologies is by this point. Or look at someone like the Charles Galton Darwin, of course part of the Galton Darwin Wedgwood inbred family line that really did practice what they preached when it came to eugenics and thought that they would be able to interbreed to create the perfect humans. One of the progeny of that family line, Charles Galton Darwin, I think the grandson of Charles Darwin, wrote a book called The Next Million Years, where he talked about basically the it takes a million years for a species to evolve, like humanity, but we can do that in the course of generations now with technology by basically manipulating people's underlying biology and things of that nature. That was written, I believe, in the 1930s. So this is something that's been talked about for a very long time, and I think this is the type of societal engineering that we're talking about when we start to go beyond beyond the profit motive and look at what's really underlying and really motivating these people for whom money really isn't the motivating factor.
I think what we're talking about, we can talk about making the perfect human or whatever, all right? And we can say, oh, we're going to perfect this. But I think what we're really talking about is not necessarily making and turning everyone into a genius, for example, or turning everyone into a well-adjusted member of society. I think we're talking about getting rid of the morons, all right? The violent, whatever. We are talking about culling the herd, in my opinion. We're not just when we talk about manipulation, how we're going to manipulate, we're going to remove some people from the gene pool. That's the implication. I watched Bill Gates on a he was talking about nuclear power in an interview with someone. Oh, I saw the interview maybe 6-8 weeks ago. I'm not sure when it was conducted, but fairly recently. And Bill Gates was talking about the operation of nuclear power plants and how important it was to automate the plants. And he said, because we don't want any more people in there than absolutely necessary. And I saw him, and it was as if someone had asked him to handle some snakes. All right? And it was the idea, though, they're all slimy and I don't want to touch any of these snakes. That was the way... That was the impression I had of his impression or his reaction to people. He's not averse to getting rid of a lot of people. I mean, his idea of making a better world is not making a better world for everybody, but I think just thinning the herd.
Unfortunately, you're correct. And I think people will point out, and perhaps quite rightly, when they look at someone like Bill Gates, part of that must be his underlying character as someone who's attracted to computers and sort of the world of programming, you know, robot kind of things with that, or programs at any rate that will do what you tell them to do. I think that obviously appeals to a certain type of person and personality, but I think it's something that is a common trait of the technocratic class, that really people are just things to be used for a given end, and it really doesn't matter, obviously.
Even the used, how useful are 20, 30, 40% of the American people right now in a world that's becoming increasingly robotized, if there is such a word?
Yes,
right? We're going to see more and more. How useful are these people?
Well, you're exactly right. I think up until this point in society, there has always been a need for a large working class to perform the manual labor that was needed to underlie the economy. But you're right. We are reaching an inflection point where that is no longer needed. And that was pointed out. That's been pointed out for a number of years now, perhaps most notably back in 2000 in Wired magazine in an article called Why the Future Doesn't Need Us by Bill Joy, where he was Bill Joy, the co-founder of Sun Microsystems, and was talking about the various technology conferences and things that he'd attended, where he was talking about the way that this is openly discussed. You know, we really don't need humans, as many humans as we used to. We're reaching that point where nanotechnology and genetic engineering and robotics is making the human species an endangered species in many ways. And this scared Bill Joy enough for him to go and write this article, which is really quite revealing in a number of ways. But for others, it's like a pet project, and they're sort of reveling in it. That should be very, very bone-chilling to a lot of people out there who have to think about the ways that, I mean, anyone who's probably listening to this conversation, unless you have 7 or 8 digits in your bank account, or maybe 9 or 10, you're probably not even going to be included in the conversation regarding this, let alone, you know, considered for perpetuation. And I don't want to make this into something that sounds like some sort of sci-fi fantasy or something. I think there's a long documented history of this that involves, again, a lot of family legacies, including the Gates and others, that have ascribed to this eugenics philosophy that underlies this.
You know, it's interesting to speculate about Bill Gates' personality and perhaps his wife's personality. They've had one child, so far as I know. I don't think they're going to have another one. Do you know if I'm correct about that? Or whether they... I think they've only had one child.
You may be correct, but they might have multiple children. I did a report recently that talked about the school that they go to, which doesn't will not use the Common Core curriculum that the Gates Foundation is helping to fund, which is, I think, telling in and of itself. But I can't remember if it was one or two children.
Well, regardless, it's just I wonder how those children are going to grow up, because having any children at all has to be a little bit hypocritical for Gates insofar as he believes in. I think he's inclined not just to have Planned Parenthood, but perhaps to reduce the population. And he's taking a chance that his children are going to be a burden rather than the intellectuals or aristocrats or whatever who will survive when the rest of the great unwashed are culled from the herd. It's what we live in dangerous times, and dangerous for this reason. The underclass that's subject to being culled is going to sense this before it's all over. And we have to wonder, are they going to riot? Are they going to burn down not just neighborhoods, but cities? What's going to happen here as they fight for their survival, as they certainly will? I mean, we've got a group of people say, you people need to die. We've got another group who say, oh, no, we're going to survive. You need to die. Are we coming out of something like the French Revolution? Shall we invest in guillotines?
Yes, well, not quite. I don't think that's going to be the template for future revolution, but it is something to think about. I mean, I think we are going to move into a sort of revolutionary era, but I don't think it will look quite like the French Revolution or any revolution that's preceded it. I think this is a revolution that in some ways has been being prepared for in the United States specifically, as well as in other places, for a very, very long time. And in the United States context, I'd point to Rex 84 and some of these other plans for the implementation of martial law that have been worked on for decades and decades now. And this is well established and well ensconced, I think, in various branches of the U.S. government and the continuity of government plans and things like this. I mean, there has been a concerted effort to create a plan for the disintegration of American society for a very long time. And I think it's at least on the cards that can be used in the event of one of those types of revolutionary society or societal revolutions. But the point, I think, of that is that it's not that this is going to be used to wrap everything up in a controllable way so much as maybe the disintegration is the point. Ultimately, again, it's going to be a very small clique of the Gates and whoever, you know, those types of people who want to be at the very top of a system of a very, very, very few, a thinned out herd, as it were. Yeah. So the complete disintegration of a society like the United States may ultimately be in their interest. And unfortunately, the entire infrastructure for that has been set up with the militarization of the police and the implementation of these martial law plans and all of this. It's a very worrying scenario.
We can talk about disintegration, and if you want to cull the herd, disintegration is a good way to do it. You don't have to go out there and set up concentration camps. You don't have to march people through, into gas chambers or whatever. All you have to do is cut off the food supply, and they will start competing amongst themselves for whatever scraps they can find, and they'll start killing each other off. And all you have to do is just protect yourself and your family and your castle, get it surrounded by, enough martial forces where you are protected, and just let the rest of them kill each other off and see who survives. So the disintegration feeds that culling.
And while we're on the theme of the Gates, they're major investors in the Svalbard Global Seed Vault, which is located in Norway on a secluded island that is basically this seed vault that's designed to survive whatever type of global cataclysm may come, including the infection of the world's food supply with GMO monstrosities. This seed vault buried deep in a mountainside will basically preserve the genetic heritage of the Earth in case, I guess, there is some sort of cataclysmic event and we need to repopulate the Earth, or at least reseed it after everything is said and done.
Yeah, the Gates Foundation, one of the major investors in this. After all the genetically modified foods fail or cause consequences we can't control, somebody says, hey, maybe we need to go back to heritage seeds, and we just happen to have a stack of them up there on an island in the, near Norway. We've got about 30 seconds left, James. You want to give us a pitch for Corbett Report?
Just CorbettReport.com, CORBETTReport.com is the one-stop shop for everything along these lines. And I should point out that we were both wrong. Apparently, the Gates have three children.
Really?
And apparently
well,
so.
Did you get an email on that, or are you doing research while we're talking?
I can research while talking. It's one of my skills.
Well, then we'll find out next time. I'll ask you if you can do research, talk, and chew bubble gum at the same time. Then you're really among the elite. I want to thank you for being on here. Yeah, that's true. Have a good Christmas. Happy holidays. James Corbett from the Corbett Report, thank you for being on the program. Look forward to talking to you beginning of next year. Thank all of you folks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, with good Lord, bless you, me, James, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money, money, always sunny in a